This year has been extremely challenging for me. I am broken. And I am healing.
I'm here at the memorial wall. I wanted to do something to remember my mom.
For some reason, I'm having anxiety. Obviously, it's normal with everything that's going on right now.
I think I'm going to take a break for a while.
You can get through it. And if you can get through it, there's a greater reward on the other side.
Just like anybody else, you know, I'm just trying to do my little part to try and save my community.
I'm just really excited we're back open.
And I am smiling under my mask.
Incredible scenes on the day the fans came back.
Welcome back to the theater.
You guys, it's been so long.
We just have to band together as a community and get people's lives back.
Even as we grieved, we grew, that even as we hurt, we hoped, that even as we tired, we tried, that we'll forever be tied together, victorious.
I don't know what it is about that bumper video, but I think it just describes so well, you know, what we have been through in the last couple of years. You know, it's Susan and I have in our married life have had different TV shows that we've enjoyed. Some of them we've enjoyed on our own, and some of them we've enjoyed together. Say, for instance, Susan loves the British baking show. I prefer not to watch that. I'd like to eat what they bake, but not necessarily want to watch them go through all the onset shows. She loves that one, but on the same hand, she doesn't like any of the Marvel movies, or she doesn't like it when, you know, to watch golf. Which I get that, but golf is really good to take a nap to. I mean, they whisper. There's usually birds singing in the background. And when you fall asleep for about, you know, half hour to an hour, you just catch up when you get back and you really haven't lost anything. You know, it's the perfect thing to be able to take you through. But we do have some shows that we really like to watch together. And one of them relates to this morning, and that is This Is Us. This Is Us has been one of those shows where just incredible writing. We'll look to each other and go, man, they just weave through on this thing. And if you haven't seen it, it is basically just the whole storyline of how this family really gets through the trauma of losing their dad, and how it really then begins to wind through their family, and how the mom and how the three siblings, all of them, begin to work its way through. And like I said, the writing is incredible. But I think the other thing about it, it just so many times it makes me want to just jump into the screen and share Jesus with them. Because as the old U2 song says, they just have not found what they're looking for. And you're just like, I you just need Jesus. There's something here where you just want to go in and go, this is it. All the things that you're looking for, you're going all the way around this thing. This is really the core of what you need. And so it has been a show that we've really enjoyed. This morning, I want to show you a clip because this really relates to as the mental health weaves through all of the episodes. And I believe it's in its last season and its final episodes. This one is a clip where it comes from Randall and Beth, and Randall is the one son where he's navigating through with his three daughters. They probably have the most intact marriage of the different siblings, but in their case, they're getting a struggle with their daughters, in particular their oldest daughter, who wants to tell them that she's going to get out of high school early, leave home, and move to Boston with her boyfriend. And this is kind of how it looks at the dinner table. Take a look at this.
Mom, how's it going at the dance studio? I'd love to hear about it.
That's what? Very nice, Tess.
It's unusually nice, Tess. Yeah, work is fine. Busy, finding my way, but, you know, it's good. Thanks for asking. For the very first time ever.
Does anyone want to hear a knock-knock joke?
Okay, what's going on?
What?
What? You two making eyes at each other. And not the normal lovey-dovey eyes, okay? It's the we're up to something eyes. And Tess is showing unusual interest in things she is off the charts uninterested in. And I ain't heard a knock-knock joke in this house for a clean 7 years, so what's going on? You're tugging your ear. Why's she tugging her ear? What's tugging her ear?
I'm getting a C in algebra.
What? Well, you've been working with the tutor.
It's a tactic. It's all tactics. They're tactics.
Yeah,
spill it.
Huh.
Now.
finishing out this school semester next month, and I'm moving to Boston with Malik. Knock, knock.
Yeah. You know, when it comes to our mental health, it relates to every aspect of our life, doesn't it? I mean, it affects our marital relationship. It affects our parental relationships. It affects our siblings' relationship. It affects our friendships on every level. How we are doing in our mental health will definitely spill down into our relationships, and which is why I'm so thankful that we've been able to open up the conversation as a church to be able to go, let's talk about this. Let's talk about something that we have all been dealing with and get an open discussion on it. And I've heard that the Wednesday night 6:30 panel was incredible. And so if you haven't had a chance to attend that, it'll be again this Wednesday at 6:30, which again, will keep the conversation going and keep it up and going. And so I think the whole thing, the question this morning, I think, for us is I want to back it up a little bit, and I want to ask the question, so how do we get to be proactive in our mental health? I mean, we've identified the fact that we all experience fear and shame and guilt and different things as we go along, and we're talking into those things, and that it's okay to struggle. And it's okay to seek help. It's more than okay. It's great, you know, to be able to help someone else help you as you navigate through these things and when you feel stuck. But my question is, what can we do that really helps us as we go along to just invest in our mental health? So that when we go through the things in life, when we may not be able to control what comes into our life, but we really can continue to move toward health in our own life so that when we do come to these crisis moments or we come to these hard moments, that we can move through them in the most healthy way possible. How do you do that? And you know, this is the point, I think, when if we've been around church very long, that you would really expect a do and don't list. Do this, don't do this. Do spend less time on social media. Do spend time with others in community. Don't stay up so late. Don't watch so much TV, but read more. I mean, we're really good, typically, at the do's and don'ts. But what's interesting is that when you go to Jesus and you really begin to look at how he responded to those who were in distress and who were burdened and who were weary, he didn't give them a list of do's and don'ts. He didn't. He went countercultural. And instead, he really gave them an invitation. And so on Palm Sunday, as we're reminded, as we've said, that Jesus is entering into Jerusalem, everybody is in a frenzy. They're all, you know, yelling, Hosanna, Hosanna, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. And they are all just, they're into it. But what they are is they are a weary and a distressed people who are truly looking for soul rest. They want their souls to be at rest. They want that peace and contentment that comes. And so this is why their chants are really chants for hope. They're like, yes, hope is finally coming. It's finally going to be here and everything that we want. And what's interesting is that when we look in our culture provides so many things that are false hopes of soul rest. So many things that are not really the thing that are going to bring us the hope and the rest that we want. And what's interesting is that Jesus all along, when you read the Gospels, was pointing to these things, to the very thing that would be foundational in giving us hope and continuing to increase in that hope as we go through life. He was pointing to that so many times. And so this morning, I want to turn to a very familiar passage from Matthew 11. That most of us, if you've been around the church at all, you've heard it. And it comes from Matthew 11, 28 through 30, and it says this, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you, learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart. And you'll find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light." I love how Eugene Peterson paraphrases it in The Message, and he says, "Are you tired? Are you worn out? Are you burned out on religion? Come to me. Get away with me and you recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. It's a great line. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. So where are we going to go this morning? Is I want to talk about just these first three things. One, I want to just talk about the problem that we face. Secondly, as we live in our culture. Secondly, the invitation, and just kind of dive into what is this invitation that Jesus has really given us. And then what I would call the exchange. The exchange that he wants us to make, all of us, in order that we can really be at peace and at rest and have the soul rest, the very thing that we all are wanting. And so let's just start with the problem. All who are weary and burdened, or as Eugene Peterson puts, are you tired, are you worn out, are you burned out in religion? Now, there are some passages when you come to them and you think, man, I don't know if I can really relate to that one at this moment. But this is one of the ones where I just think, I think we can all go, yeah, I get that. Weary and heavy laden, burdened. I mean, you don't have to go very far in our lives where we go, yeah, been there, done that, experienced that, am experiencing that. You know, these are two different words, weary and burdened, but they're feelings that we're all too acquainted with, and sometimes we just sense one, and sometimes we get both of them at the same time. And the word weary here really just means I'm tired from hard toil. Whether it would be the pace of life, or whether it would be being overextended. We have such a fast pace. We live in a go, go, go society. It is not less is more. The mantra of our day is more And we go and we go and we push and we push. And what's happened is we've reduced anything of a very important word in our life is we've reduced the margin. And if the margin is here's your load and here's your capacity, and the in-between is margin. And margin is good. I think margin is even necessary. In fact, even Jesus, I think, modeled the fact that he had margins in his life. Oftentimes he would pull away to do what? He would pray. And he would do certain things that were just kind of, you would think, man, now's the time to really keep it going. Man, you just did this miracle, keep it going, keep it going. And he'd pull away. Nobody could find him. And so he was producing margin in his life. But what's happened, I think, in our society where it's a go, 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 fast pace, fast pace, fast pace, is our load and our capacity have shrunk. And so that they're so close together that we're all on this kind of burdened and on edge, overloaded. And we go through life going, man, I'm tired, but I can't take a nap because naps are not culturally, you know, celebrated. I can't slow down because, you know, if I come to you and I go, hey, what'd you do today? Well, I took a really good nap. We go, really? Man, I don't have time for a nap. You know, and which one is really exalted? It's the go, go, go. You know, you took a nap? It's almost as if it's become, you know, something where it's almost like a sin to even to step back. You know, it was Corrie Ten Boom who said, if the devil can't make you sin, he'll make you busy. And we get in this rush pace of life. It used to be that when we were more of an agricultural society, that the rhythm of the day really provided the margin. You know, my mom, when I was in junior high and into high school, she thought it would be a good idea that I go work on my uncle's ranch. And so I would go there for the whole summer, and it was hard work. And you would get up in the morning, and you would go out, and you'd be working all day. You'd be working. You'd come in. And, of course, on the ranch, it wasn't breakfast, lunch, and dinner. It was breakfast, dinner, supper. So your biggest meal of the day was what we would call lunch. So you come in and you'd be exhausted and you'd have this huge dinner with beef and potatoes and all that goes with it and a big apple pie and ice cream for dessert, you know, and you do that and all the blood's in your stomach and you're just going, I need a nap. And it was okay. We would take a nap. I remember my uncle, the only thing he could get on the screen, he loved the Chicago Cubs, and he could get the Chicago Cubs station. So you watch a Cub game, we'd take about an hour nap, and go, okay, let's go. We get back out, we go to work, we work the rest of the day, come in for the leftovers supper, you know, for anything, and then you'd rest. And you would do that, and you would do that, and but there was rhythm in that. There was margin in that. And then for the first time, I really got to experience what Jesus was talking about when he talked about a Sabbath. Because on Sunday, we wouldn't work. We would interrupt the rhythm. We would drive to town, which happened to be 50 miles on a dirt road. You'd get up early. You'd go to town. We'd go to church. We'd go have a picnic. You'd do something else. You would just spend time together. The whole concentration was on Jesus, and the whole day was about taking a rest. Now, that is not our normal rhythm, is it? And I even found when I left the ranch and came back and got into college and did different things, I struggled because that's not the rhythm that you and I are in. That's why we look at daylight savings time and we go, what in the world? Why do we even do this? You know, and that was all about rhythms. That was all about margins. That was all about daylight and what you could do. And now, you know, like you just turn on the lights, you just keep going and you can go into the wee hours of the morning. And so we're so pushed. And what's happened is that in busyness and margin shrinkage has happened. And so our margins are small. It even affects us spiritually. John Wartburg says, for many of us, the great danger is not that we will renounce our faith. It's that we'll become so distracted and rushed and preoccupied that we'll settle for a mediocre version of it. Instead of having faith at the core of our lives, it's just something that is a part of our lives and we fit it in. And we fit Jesus into our lives. You know, I understand this, in a little bit better way, not so much because Susan and I have pursued this, but because circumstances have just warranted it and dictated it. And we've been, you know, forefront with you about our journey of chronic illness and how that affects our mental health and how we journey through that. But the interesting thing in the whole thing is that it has forced us to slow down. It's forced us to have to let things go. Things that we used to think were essential, things that we thought we had to do, we've just had to slow down. And sometimes we've had to just say, it can't be done, we can't do it. And there's sometimes when it's just hard. Because I want to go, I want to pursue, I want to get this next thing, I want to do it. And we can even do it in ministry. And ministry doesn't change the things. We can bring the same rhythm into ministry and we just boom, 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 go, push the margins, push them to the level. And I would like to say that we did it because we really pursued it, but it wasn't. It was that circumstances have forced us into it. And it's really shown us, wow, we had very little margin. And now as the margin increases, we even find ourselves going, is this okay? You know, is this all right to do that? So the first thing I think is it was just because the pace of life, we're just weary. But the second is burdened, and the whole burden word is just to be loaded down. All you who are weary and burdened, worn out or burned out on religion. And I think Eugene Peterson really is getting into something here when he talks about this whole burned out on religion aspect. Because this whole idea of a yoke, we don't really understand the illustration, but the whole yoke was on a beast of burden. It was a heavy piece of equipment that they would bear the load of that. But when Jesus referred to the yoke, often he would refer to it as the law. And he would talk about the yoke of the law, the heavy burden of the law. And this is why he was so hard on the religious leaders, because he was like, you're taking the very thing that was meant to lead people to me, the law, and you're using it as a yoke and something heavy that's putting a burden on them, thinking that it is something that they have to do and earn and obey and can't struggle with. And it's a heavy burden that you're laying on people. It is a yoke that shouldn't be there, which is why Jesus says, my yoke is easy. My burden is light. Which is why Jesus does something completely different. And he doesn't give them a to-do list, a to-don't list. He doesn't give them instruction. He gives them an invitation. He invites them to something. Something completely different. And we see this. This is the second point. In just these three words, come to me. Three incredibly simple words, but very, very profound. And really what it is, it's an invitation to a relationship. He said, I'm inviting you into relationship. Now, here's what's interesting. When you look at the other world religions, they are all offering different things about how you and what you must do in order to obtain the peace, in order to obtain what you want to do religiously. And so Jesus doesn't offer us a fourfold path to enlightenment like Buddhism does. He doesn't give us five pillars of peace that you can earn through submission like Islam does. He doesn't give us 10 ways to relieve your weary soul like a lot of the self-help books do. And I think here is where Jesus does something completely different. And I think that we are drawn to those things because we just give me the to-do list. Just give me what the steps I have to follow. But Jesus instead just simply offers himself. He just is not found in the to-do list. It's not found in doing something else. Jesus says, your soul rest is simply found in me. In other words, the foundation of a weary and burdened soul, the foundation of it, it's not the only thing, but it's the foundation to help in a weary, burdened soul, Jesus says, is me. Come to me. You who are weary and heavy laden, come to me. David spoke of it in Psalm 62 when he said, for God alone, my soul, I wait in silence. For my hope is from him. He's my rock and my salvation, my fortress. I shall not be shaken. On God rests my salvation and my glory. And so Jesus was always inviting people, this invitation language, this come to me language, while maybe it wasn't said in those direct words, when you look in the scriptures, he often did this as he guided people through and he was drawing them to. A classic example of this is one that we're familiar with, and that is Mary and Martha. And you remember Mary and Martha, they were invited Jesus over for dinner. Martha is busy with all the festivities and all the things, getting it all ready. Mary is sitting at Jesus' feet. Martha's getting really upset about it. And she's like, Jesus, don't you even care that she's not helping getting things prepared and do things? And then Jesus says something really interesting. Martha, Martha, which is very endearing. He's not condemning her. He's just saying, Martha, you're weary and you're burdened. You're worried and upset about many things. But few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. What's he doing here? He is inviting Martha into something that is so much different. He's inviting her to come. He's not asking her to be different from the way that he's wired her. But he's asking her, Martha, even in you, even in the way that I've wired you, most essential thing for you, to, first and foremost, as the foundation of what we're doing, is that you would come to me. And I think we've all heard this story before. And in our fast-paced society, we think, how in the world? How do you do that? And I think the question is worth asking, what exactly is Jesus asking Martha and us then to do? There's something better, he says. You'll find rest for your soul. And what is it? And that's what I want to call the exchange. And the reason I call it the exchange is because what Jesus is actually asking us to do is exchange yokes. I want you to give up your yoke. I want you to give up your burden and weary yoke of trying to do it yourself, do it on your own, get through, perform, all the things that come with that. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. Now, contrary to what we may think, this is not just sitting around and doing nothing. Because Jesus didn't do that. Jesus didn't do that, and he doesn't want us to do that. It's different. It's really the upside-down nature of the kingdom of God, and it's counterintuitive. It's a work that provides rest, and those usually don't come together for us. If I could sum it up, it would be along the lines of saying three things Jesus is asking here. I want you to believe, I want you to abide, and I want you to follow in my steps. Believe in me by coming to me. I want you to believe in me. I want you to abide in me, to remain in me, and I want you to follow in my steps. Now listen, just let's look at these just for a minute. By believing, here's what Jesus is saying. It's John 6:29 brings this out. This is the work of God, that you believe in him who has sent me. This is not just an intellectual assent. This is not just going, hey, Jesus, I believe in you. Yeah, that's good. No, this believe is a transfer of trust and going, I trust you. First and foremost, I want you to be the center of my life. I want you to be the foundation. You're at the core. I want you to be the core of my existence and all that I do. That's the believing. Then there's the abiding. The abiding is to John 15:4. I abide in me and I in you. This is to be dependent upon, to be connected to the whole vine illustration of Jesus' powers flowing through us from the vine to the branch. And it is he working in us. It's not us trying to perform for him. It's him working in and through us. And so he understands and he cares. And so we're closely connected. So we believe in him. We're in close proximity to him. And then he says, follow in my footsteps. 1 Peter 2:21, and this you were called because Christ suffered for us, leaving you an example that you should follow in his steps. There's a book that has become quite popular and I think is really a must for all believers to read called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry by John Mark Comer. It is one out there. You can get it on Amazon. I think that, and it will challenge you. Because it challenges us in our rhythm of life that we now have. It challenges us in our speedy go-go-go culture to pull back and to really rest in him. And he puts it these way: be with Jesus, become like Jesus, and do what Jesus would do, which is the believe, the abide, and the follow in his steps. And what's interesting in Christianity, we can become so one-dimensional. And we can say, well, just believe. The whole concept is believe. Well, that's only one dimension of it. Yes, believe is important. But what about the abide? And what about the following in his footsteps? And when we do, we're going to look different. We should look different than the culture. And I'm not talking just so much about the things that we do, but maybe it's the things that we say no to. And they look and they go, well, you're crazy. You know, and I get this, man. And when you're raising kids in this generation, and they're asking you to do this and this and this, and you're speeding up, and they're wanting you to do more and more and more, and travel and travel and travel, and we got to make decisions, you know, about what we're going to do, and it seems like, from my perspective, from what I've looked at, it seems like the spiritual life is the one that gets put on the lowest level, and we're pushing to go and do, and not that these are bad things, but if you don't say no to anything, in order to rest, we don't teach rhythm, we don't teach margins, we just keep pushing and pushing and pushing. And we do it in our lives, and we ask ourselves, why am I so on edge? Why am I so, and it's because our margins and our capacity and our load are so close together. And Jesus says, no, come to me. And I think then the whole idea of Sabbath, which is a foreign concept to us, the whole idea of slowing down, which is another concept that's foreign to us, the whole idea of simplicity in life is foreign to us. But I think these are the things that come as an outflow. If you try to do those without Jesus, it's not going to work. But that's why Jesus says, come to me, believe, get in close proximity to me. The closer you get to me, the more you understand how I operate and bring margins into your life. And then those margins will flow in. And then you'll find yourself wanting to take Sabbaths. You'll find yourself wanting to be a more simple life. You'll see yourself wanting to slow down. And say no to certain things. And say and ask yourself, what is it that's really important for us to do, and what do we need to say no to? And I think that's a good evaluation for us. Are there margins in our lives right now? When's the last time I said no to something so that I could say yes to something better? Meaning saying yes to maybe more time with Jesus, maybe more time. See, it comes from intentionality. And if we don't do anything intentional on this, we will just gravitate, we will just default into the fast-paced, and we'll try to add Jesus to that fast-paced life. And he's just like, I'm not in that. Slow it down. It can be as simple as even when you drive in your car and having no noise. And just asking yourself, Jesus, speak to me in this moment. I'm driving for 20 minutes here. Let's talk. That's producing margin. It's putting margin, and it is hard. I get it. It's hard. But I think it's something that's necessary, that Jesus says, this is what will bring you the soul rest, the very thing that we're looking for. Let's take this home. Worship team, you can come on up. And so as we evaluate, what is it? Do I have margins in my life? Are we slowing down? What do we need to do to be able to say no to some things? And first and foremost, it comes just by knowing, look, Lord, I've been chasing so many things. I've been trying to find hope in so many things. But I understand that truly the only thing that you find hope in is you. And I want you. I don't want the false things. I don't want the false hopes. I don't want the false expectations. I want you. So would you be the core of my life? Will you be the center of my life? And if you've never done that, we would love to talk with you to be able to help you navigate through that, to understand exactly what that means and to bring, it's pretty simple. But secondly, I think it's just, I want to be close to you. I want you to be the anchor. I want to live a moment by moment dependent upon you, allowing you to live your life in and through me, through the power of your Holy Spirit, that as I go throughout the day, I take you with me. I don't compartmentalize my relationship with you. You're with me all the time. And I'm bringing you into everything that I do. And in the following in his footsteps, it is, I want to pattern my life after yours. And how you showed margin, I want to have margin. Accepting that invitation of Jesus on all three levels, I think, is foundational for us to move forward and be proactive in a positive mental health. That doesn't mean that there won't be times when things come and we get stuck. And thank God that he's provided great people to help us, and even medications that can help us get through certain things, that help us on things, all of that is under God's design. All of it is under his authority. All of it is under his creation, and God has provided that for us. But first and foremost, all of that will mean nothing if we don't first have this space and come and accept his invitation to us. Hopefully your margin will begin to increase as we go through, both as a family, as an individual. Our mental health is dependent upon it, which is why Jesus said, I'm going to give you myself. I'm not going to give you a to-do list. Let's stand and worship together.